SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, about 5 minutes into hour two, and catching up with Hammer, who had that surprise visit a week ago when we said good morning. Hammer was sitting right in the studio, right looking through the glass at Casey, and he had made the surprise last-minute trip to the Eclipse Awards, and great to catch up with Rick back home in California. Good morning.
We're back on the left coast. Looking through the window here with the early shift this morning with you, Steve, which is great. And sun's actually going to come up today. Yesterday, of course, it was a washout. And apparently tomorrow's going to be the same. And that's too bad because of the Rainbow Six carryover coming up this weekend, which is Saturday. So those of you that watched the races yesterday from Santa Anita, I think a similar track, similar run style is in order for tomorrow for the Rainbow Six giveaway. And it's going to be interesting to see what the pool is, Steve. I saw in the paper they're talking $10 million. I don't know if it's going to get that high. Last time there was a mandatory carryover, which was the last day of the Oak Tree meet, or the fall meet in November, which actually was my last day, too, and I was looking it up. I go, I got to remember that day. But the carryover was similar, and it was $6.7 million bet into it on a nice sunny day with turf racing. So tomorrow will be interesting with the rain and the way the track is and the way it's playing. It looks like just looking the first time around, it looks like looks like a favorite type day, which it was that day in November with all that money bet into it. The take-home was $601, so I don't know if that's going to ring in some of the people's heads, some of the bigger bettors or syndicates' heads, that the payoff sometimes is not worth the big investment like some of the other pick sixes we had before. So pool size, I'm wondering, Steve. I'm still a rookie when it comes to these rainbow things. What do you think? What do you think? But it was 6-7 last time. You think it's got to do at least that, I would think.
Well, here's the rub on it. Because the racing office, wisely avoided putting any turf into the card, knowing that rain was almost certain. And looking at the two stakes where, you've got three horses to worry about probably in the Lewis at the most, and two horses to focus in on the San Pascal. And really, because we're so used to the insane structure of the sequences on force distribution days at Gulfstream, where they try to make it impossible for anybody to win with a modest ticket, this sequence is 9 by 6 by 10 by 9 by 8 by 11. And so I think, and frankly, Jay Pribman may have let something out of the bag just now with Time Is Now, the Mandela runner on the rail in that 6.5 furlong eighth race, may be a lean. I think some of the coverage will be more modest, probably, Hammer, just by virtue of the strength of the obvious players in the stakes in particular. And even in the other maiden race that starts the sequence, the placement on the six is nice because people will get a read on the board to see if anybody's taking surprise money in that fifth race. But, I mean, you look at it, you would think the one and the five and the eight probably take the lion's share, and modest budgets will be able, I would think, to get through with those three horses. So I think the structure and four of the six races kind of lend me to think people will not have to go as deep as they might on another day. So I don't know, what that, I don't know. $4.5 million.
I'm with you as far as the structure goes. I mean, it's one of those things, as we talk about handicapping-wise, if you're going to play it, don't get cheap. Play it to win, but you know, don't go crazy. But I agree with you. There's a few races here you can go short in, and you want to spread a couple because you have to go for that a little bit. And with the two stakes, there's three maiden races, and then that race at the end with the non-winners at two. The three maiden races, I think, are the races you got to take a shot in, and maybe go four or five deep. In that seventh race, the maiden claimer, I mean, now, so that's the race that could be the, you know, the goofball race, and I think you probably need to go to take a shot to get a price in there. You need to go six, seven deep and just hope for the best in the swap. But I agree with you with the stakes. The first one, the Lewis, I mean, just the way the track goes, looking at the charts yesterday, watching the way the races were run, they didn't train yesterday, so the track was what it was, and I would doubt they're going to train tomorrow just because of the advanced warning of the storm, and so the track's a little similar, maybe even a little wetter. I mean, I'm looking to single something, and I mean, maybe Mucho Gusto is the horse to take a shot on a single and give yourself a chance to spread in other places. Just the way the track sets up, I mean, you want to be on or near the lead. There's no question about that. Generally, the fields will string out a little bit. Mucho Gusto, with the long experience, second time going long, and his speed looked good. I agree with. I just caught the tail end of Jay with the Nolo Contesto. I think this horse has a bright future, whether it's right now, leading in, you know, the first part of the year, the second part of the year. But I think, and knowing John, he will not rush Nolo Contesto. He'll take his cue probably from the race tomorrow. And if things are, you know, really progressing that way, they'll push the button and try to go down the Derby trail. But if not, he won't rush it. He's not like that. But I think the horse is a real, real nice horse. Gunmetal Gray, you know, we liked him last time, not necessarily in the fashion that he won. I don't see the setup being the same. But, again, he is a great three-stake winner. And, some of these others aren't. But the style, his earlier style fits. But Mucho Gusto is going to be out there. And you mentioned the other race, the two horses that will take most of the action on the outside, with McKenzie and Battle of Midway. But, you know, when you look at this race, you think about this race, you've got a pretty good run here. The horses, there's eight of them, that didn't go to the big dance for $9 million. This is not a bad race for $200,000. When you put it all together with Pavel's a grade one winner and McKenzie's a grade one winner and Battle of Midway's a grade one winner. So not bad for the leftovers out here in California for a couple hundred. And the way things are going with those two horses going to the shed, meaning Accelerate and City of Light, I mean, you come out of this race going okay. I think you might be heading a little farther than the San Anita handicap for the big money, because I don't know what else is out there for that kind of cash coming out of this race. I know, McKenzie or Bob mentioned the San Anita handicap, and they all did because they kind of have to. But I would think Dubai might be in a couple of these horses' future if they come out of here. Okay, don't you think so, Steve?
You would have to expect so. Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, look at O'Neill, and O'Neill's already made those kinds of trips with Pavel, and you look up and down that list. Of course, at the same time, somebody's going to be watching too, and stay home. You know, because of the big cap, there's still nothing wrong with winning a big cap.
No, and heaven forbid you could run in both of those races. Oh my gosh, they're 3 weeks apart. My gosh.
Well,
you can't do that.
Yeah,
you can't do that anymore. I mean,
well, wait a minute. Is it?
We act, isn't it? Isn't the
no? But, no, they're tighter than that.
Isn't the weekend on the 30th the Dubai race, or am I off a week?
Yes, the 30th is right. That, yeah, it is. 30th
yeah,
is right.
So it's 3 weeks. And actually, when the San Anita handicap used to be on the first weekend, in the first Saturday in March, and for years, you know, it was a week. I mean, a month. We scheduled a month away, figuring, hey, you know what, you can run here and then go there. But nobody did. So when the longer season came along with Holiday Park, just kind of moved the standing handicap a little further into the year, so that division wasn't, you know, done by mid first week of March. So it moved it because it didn't matter. Nobody took the month even to go, which is just it just blows my mind. Seemed to me it'd be a perfect perfect prep for that race, but that never worked. But you mentioned those two horses. I mean, McKenzie, you know, Bob had he was probably itching to go back there, but as it happens, most of the time he makes the right call with his horses, and McKenzie will use this as a prep for something, you know, whether he's going to stay here or go there. But Pavel probably will do the same in Battle of Midway. Hey, Battle of Midway is quietly developing into that nice mile, mile of 16 type horse that's going to be around. I'm glad they brought him back, he's one of those quiet ones, but he's going to win a lot of money. He's going to be okay. I wouldn't mind. You probably will see him back there on Belmont Day, I would think, right? Going a mile. But he's a nice horse to have. McKenzie's definitely the horse to beat here. But there's a couple with some chances that I think you got to take a little bit of look at, especially with the way the track goes, if McKenzie doesn't like it. Besides those two, you mentioned Dabster, I heard early. He's got the speed. And, you know, he doesn't give it up. I got to give him credit. He's hung in there pretty good against some decent horses. So, you know, he's in there to ensure a little bit of a pace, I'm sure, for McKenzie to jump on. I don't see him. He runs his better races when he's in the race, so I don't see him back too far. And, you know, Pavel's out there to stretch his leg. So a good bunch here, but I think the races that you need to go short on, like you said, are probably the stake races. And it was interesting to hear Jay talk about Time Is Now. Now, kind of odd when you look at this. You see a three-year-old maiden race for 7 furlongs and then a three-year-old dirt race for maidens for 6.5. Well, this eighth race, just for the record, was originally scheduled to go 6.5 on the turf, and they decided to just take the race on the dirt. So some of these horses, I mean, each horse in both these races, you had a chance to say, do I want to go 7, do I want to go 6.5? So that's why the oddity of having the two distances on the same day. This was originally a turf race. Not that these horses are turf horses, but maybe some of them had the inclination to try the turf. You got a couple with some turf experience. But anyway, this race shapes up like, to me, you know, you got to go 3-4 deep in here. You throw in Time Is Now, who's stuck on the rail, which sometimes is a bad spot to be in general. But if it gets a little heavy down there, then it's even worse. But keep that in mind. Like Jay said, the two-horse Platinum Knight shows a little speed. Any horse that shows any kind of speed and determination early, I think you got to use. And Platinum Knights is one of those ones that's going to be a little bit of a price. I think he's usable. I think you can't ever throw Baffert out. This horse has thrown in a couple of clunkers for him. But favored boat, you know, bet heavily both times. I don't think you can take your foot off the gas on this one yet. Scalper, my mandate from Glatt's got some speed going for him, and the Norski on the outside. So these are the races I think you got to take a shot if you're playing that bet to go a little deep and hope for the, you know, at least 6-7-8-1 shot to come in, you know, and brighten up that ticket. And because the last race, these races are sometimes tough and sometimes not so tough. I mean, this race looks like it has a semi-standout in the 10 horse who's dropping, and those are the kind that win this type. I know he's been out 19 times, but he does hit the bottom here, so you got to use him. You got to use Typhoon Harry on the outside, I think, with Bill Moore there. Anytime he's got a horse in, you have to double-check it. I know he's dropping back in distance, but he puts him in to win. Giddy Meister might even have a shot here, and so you got to play this with some decent, but I wouldn't go overboard here because, like we just talked about, the prices have been you know, sometimes historically these days don't pay off in a bonanza. It's a bonanza for the track because a lot of money's bet, but not necessarily a bonanza for the better that hits it for that.
Yeah, it's going to be tricky. And I think the nice part is, small budgets can get a real shot at it. That's the one thing I always am hoping for in these, you know, in these distributions, and it's something that Gulfstream just doesn't seem to get right. They seem to constantly try to make it as impossible as possible, and just make it so that only the you know, the giant powerhouse betting outfits can negotiate it. So this one does seem approachable, which is good.
Totally agree. Super Bowl wise, I've decided to stay on the West Coast. I got my tickets to a Super Ram fan, so that's always good. Last minute traveling to Atlanta, especially with the weather, was not going to be fun. So happily, we'll stay here and we'll go to our usual hangout up in Northern California for the little Super Bowl party, and go Rams. That's all I can say. And I think the game is going to be just as you said, Steve. You took the words out of my mouth. Just like last year, Philly definitely had the right attitude: play to win, do whatever at all costs. Don't play the hope we can hang in there at the end mode. McVay for the Rams, they got that same attitude: get the ball and try to score a touchdown every time. And you know that's the Patriots' way to go too. So I think you're going to see a pretty interesting game. This kid's a pretty sharp kid. This coach. Although Belichick is I can't say it, but he's a good coach. What can I say? But I think you see the Rams hang in there pretty good. I think their defense is something that New England has not faced, and if they can hang in and not get too intimidated by the bright lights early, we'll give them a game.
Yeah, it feels
3.5 out there somewhere. Okay,
Yeah, I agree. I won't be surprised if the Pats win, but the 3.5 is very inviting. Hammer, enjoy. I appreciate it, and we'll check in next week.
That sounds great, Steve, and have a good Super Bowl weekend and be safe. And you know what? I might see you in Vegas. You're going to be in Vegas, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. I expect to see you next week.
Yeah. So when are you going?
I'm leaving Wednesday, I think. Oh.
Okay, because right now plans are to drive out on Thursday and spend like there's 3 nights there and just kind of take in the action.
Excellent, you're gonna love it. It's gonna be a riot.
Good. So looking forward to that, and hopefully this rain will be out of here by now, by next week, and it'll be a nice weekend in the desert. So always a pleasure. Happy good Super Bowl weekend, everybody, and we'll catch you next week.
Rick Hammerly, folks, away they go. He's going to finally make it to Vegas, it looks like. Let's take a break, and Nick Tamro standing by. We'll do some game builder. We'll look at that pick three, the stakes pick three at Gulfstream, and we'll get an opinion on the Withers from Nick as well. Then Scully and DeRosa together, Quigley, much more. Stay with us.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio.
And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Rhythm is a dancer, it's a soul's companion. People feel it everywhere. Lift your hands and voices, free your mind and join us. You can feel it in the air. Oh, oh, it's a passion. Oh, oh, you can feel it in the air. Oh, oh, it's a passion. Oh, 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 oh.
This is the rhythm.
You can put some joy upon my face. Oh, sunshine in an empty place.
We're back at the races, and you're saying to yourself, wait a minute, that sounds like Bastille doing Rhythm of the Night. That's exactly what it is. I found that this week, and I don't know, it's like 4 years old, 5 years old. I don't know how it never got played in the U.S. Unbelievable. You should hear the whole thing. It's tremendous. They just call it Of the Night. Bastille, who's got a new release out themselves too. So it's a new year, and we're slowly slipping in new cuts to the here at WATR. Nick Tamaro standing by, and you should see, you know, people don't know this, Nick, but you were a big rave guy in your day.
Oh, yeah. The over-under on raves I've been to in my life is 0.5, and I'll take whatever action anybody wants to give me on Twitter. And you can take the under if you'd like, and I strongly advise you consider it. Yeah, not a big rave guy. I will say I'm familiar with Bastille, though, and I do know that Bastille is I actually think that Pompeii by Bastille is a very good song, and I know he's earning a lot of Good Grief is a good song as well, and is getting a lot of popularity right now because of Happier, where he's with the DJ Marshmello, who I guess dresses up like a marshmallow.
Yeah. Yeah, look at you.
I have a relatively new love interest, and she's familiarizing. She's a little bit younger than me. She's familiarizing me with a lot of these things. So I'm trying to stay hip. I'm like Dr. Evil and Austin Powers. See, I'm hip. I'm with it. You know, I can do it.
Chicks dig contest players.
That's true. Yeah. When I start to dig into the finer points of you know, making sure you have enough bankroll for the last race, it really is. It's a very stimulating conversation.
She gets stars in her eyes.
Exactly. Yeah, the highlight of last week's contest is the dinner we're going to have tonight at a place I haven't tried in Houston, which is one of the most restaurant-rich cities in America. So going to be a Spanish place called BCN. The guy has two restaurants, one of which is BCN, the other is MAD. Those are the airport codes for Madrid and Barcelona, respectively. So should be good.
Very cool.
On Monday.
Well, you know, that makes me thinking about Louisville, and you mentioned airport code. And I did mention a couple of weeks ago when the mayor announced the renaming of Standiford to Muhammad Ali.
It should change to ALI.
Well, they should, but they won't. And so SDF, which is already obscure as can be, for one of probably the two most obscure airport codes there is. The other one is MCO in Orlando.
I also think New Orleans is pretty obscure too. MSY.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. McCoy at Orlando is a classic that people look at blankly. I can tell you, when I was a kid, my mother was in the travel business. She was sent to Orlando by Sheraton to look at some properties and to, you know, when Disney was literally 10 minutes old. And we landed at McCoy, and it was still an Air Force base. There was like a Quonset hut. It was the terminal. I mean, there was nothing there. It was unbelievable. This has got to be 1970? 71?
Wow.
But MCO, for those of you that go to Orlando and say, what does that mean? It means McCoy Air Force Base. There you go. And when you go in that one entrance, that side entrance from the Kissimmee side, I think, and there's like a little cinder block building and a jet. That was literally the terminal building. I kid you not. It was like you wouldn't have known you weren't on some, you know, Philippine island. It was ridiculous.
That's pretty amazing. It is one of the busier airports you'll run into in America now, of course, with Disney, and it's they're doing a huge renovation also. So it's going to be.
Are they?
I don't know the last time you were. Yeah, it's been.
I haven't been in ages.
Oof. 3 years at least they've been working on it, so I know there's going to be a new international terminal. And one good thing about Orlando is you can pretty much get a nonstop flight to anywhere, given the desire for Disney. So yeah, not a difficult airport in terms of security and getting around with the trains and whatnot, but it functions pretty well.
Well, the Game Builder is functioning pretty well, despite some views in the darker corners of the web. The play last week, Nick, we didn't get a chance to do much recapping on Monday. We were focused more on the contest. But, I think it showed people, as this whole exercise is trying to show, that if you leverage your opinion, you can even when it chalks out like Saturday did at Gulfstream, you still can make some money. And that's what we're trying to show. Not only can you cover your bet and make a little something, but when things really go right and you've got enough prices involved in the play, well, then it obviously, it grows exponentially.
Indeed, yeah, and it is certainly drawing a lot of interest both ways, which we appreciate everybody offering their opinion. It reminds me of the interview that Jerry Jones did on the Audience Channel a couple of years ago. I think he was with Joe Bacher, he was with somebody, and so they said, Jerry, you know, what would you say about people that are saying this about you as the GM of the Dallas Cowboys, and this about you about as the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, and so on and so forth? And he said, I'd thank him for thinking about the Dallas Cowboys. So it's one of those. I thank everybody for their opinions one way or the other. I appreciate it. I love hearing it. And, I think what we're trying to do is give everybody an option in terms of structuring multi-race bets that might be different from what they've done before. If you're a dyed-in-the-wool sort of caveman multi-race better, then I don't think you should change if you think you've had a great amount of success, or even if there's maybe a couple of instances where you can integrate something that might help you spread your opinion out just a tad without being overly cautious. So, yeah, I think situations are going to dictate different approaches. Last week's pick four going into it, I think we had kind of a feeling that there was a pretty high likelihood that it was going to be a relatively chalky result. What with the Fred Hooper having two strong looking favorites and the marathon turf race, that McKnight looking like a race where Maker was going to win with somebody at probably at most 7-2 or 4-1. Then clearly the Pegasus was going to be a race where we had two horses at around less than 2-1. So, you know, it opened up that possibility, but it still meant that you could have your major opinion could win and you could make a little bit of money because there was an opportunity there. So it'll change, obviously, each week, and I'm sure one of these weeks we're going to run into a really death-defying sequence. I mean, hell, we could have talked about the Santa Anita pick six today, but that would have gotten me to start looking at California racing, and nobody wants to hear my opinion on California racing. So we're going to keep it a little simpler.
Well, we got Quigley coming up, too, at the top of the hour.
That's an opinion you want to listen to for California.
There you
racing,
go.
Absolutely. TK did a great job. He and Nate Newby did a great job last week at Gulfstream. I didn't give them enough of a shout-out on Monday. As good as anybody out there organizing a contest, being there for players, they really did a great job and had to step into the lion's share of the duties. Did Nate with Jessica taking a job in Kentucky, but he did a great job as always. And Nate structures contests very, very well. If you're ever around Santa Anita or are going to be there when he's running one of those contests, please do it because he deserves horse player support as much as anybody.
Agreed, and it was fun to get Preston Sims on the other day, on Tuesday. We had a really fun conversation with him, and I would say the biggest beneficiary so far has been Barry at the gift shop, where apparently he's literally handing out money in the form of lucky horseshoes that he's selling. It was the craziest story I ever heard.
That's great.
Yeah,
gotta love it.
There's been now there's at least three corroborating success stories involving the horseshoes that they're selling at Gulfstream. And I saw the picture of it. It's not actually a racing plate. It's like something off of a Percheron. It's not even a horseshoe from a racer. It looks like one of those big clunky things that you see in bars at that Budweiser gives away as a signage with a Clydesdale horseshoe. It's pretty funny. Let's dive into we'll stay at Gulfstream and weather. Actually, they were worried about wet weather, so they pushed the two turf stakes, you know what? It makes for an interesting 9th, 10th, 11th. Let's do a game builder pick three with the Forward Gal, Swale, and Holy Bull.
That sounds great. Obviously, being a weatherman's a tough enough job, so is being a racing secretary, but I think when you try to do both, it gets even more difficult, especially in a place like South Florida. But it'll spice up Sunday's card a tad. These stakes came together very, very well, I think, other than the Forward Gal and perhaps the Holy Bull, if you think Maximus Mischief just might be at a slightly greater level than his competition. I think there's a lot to be said for how deep these fields are. The Forward Gal is really all about feedback, coming back for Chad Brown off of that tremendous maiden win, really one of the more impressive races run by a two-year-old at Saratoga last summer. And, you know, with all that happens post-Saratoga, the Breeders' Cup, and then getting into the new year, she was one of those horses that I think if you were looking back at results, you were like, yeah, where is feedback? But here she is, and ended up winning that day very, very comfortably. That was a race that proved to be productive. Obviously, Hollywood Glory came out of it and won her next start, and is actually a rival of hers in here, came back to be twice stakes placed. And you also had Take Charge Morella, who was second, beaten a distance, who came back and broke her maiden in her next start, and then has now run in the Tempted and the Ruthless. Has proven to be a useful little filly, so no superstar by any means, but feedback did her job. She's coming back off the layoff now. This has always been a kind of a comfortable spot for Chad Brown to get horses back off mid-range layoffs. I know feedback showed a great deal of speed in her debut. I think that just had to do with the precocity and the timing. I don't really envision her being some sort of one-way speedball that wouldn't be able to adjust if the pace in here gets fast. And I do think there's a concern about that, given Fashion Faux Pas immediately to her inside really looks like a horse with a lot of speed. Comes in as a main rival, I'd say, working sharply for Arnaud Delacour after winning the Sandpiper very comfortably. 7 furlongs is something she's tried once. It was in her debut, and she got involved in a wicked pace, so I don't think you want to hold that against her. But in terms of whether she would be able to clear a horse like feedback and then stay on, I think there's a necessary amount of doubt for something like that. I'm not gonna bet on her being able to do that. I think this is a situation where you kind of want to use feedback as a lone A. You want to get through this leg with what you need, which I think is her. And then I'm just going to use a couple of C's. Champagne Anyone. I'll use Fashion Faux Pas as a C and Bye Bye Jay. I think anybody beyond those three as substitutes for feedback would just be a little bit surprising. And this is obviously not going to be a very gigantic play by any means. So you'll have some value in those backups if the favorite falters. But I mean, bottom line, if she runs back to her debut and if she shows any of the improvement off of the that normal 2 to 3 year old development includes, she's going to win very comfortably.
Kind of a super A with feedback.
Yeah, 1A of the 4 feedback and then C's of the 1, 3, and 7. Champagne Anyone is a little interesting cutting back off the Goldenrod. Didn't get a lot of pace to run at that day. Her 7-furlong win at Ellis, obviously it was very slow compared to what she'd need to run in here, but this is the kind of horse cutting back that I've always liked using for Ian Wilkes. And if she... Landeros has proven to be at his best, I think, when he comes from off the pace. So if he can time the move properly, she might just be a placing chance at best, but she's the kind of horse that at 12 or 15 to 1, if somehow this pace gets real quick and feedback needs a race off the layoff, she could really spice up your horizontal place.
Well, and I'm a little surprised that you're I don't know if you even glossed over Frond, but Frond is my is my second horse, and in a big way. First Lasix and getting on the dry track, I'm all over Ben Colebrook in this spot behind Feedback.
She drew very well. There's no doubt about it. You know, my skepticism is with the Tampa maiden form. That was a little bit of a kind of questionable group that she ran against that day. So I'm not sure if the competition is just going to be significantly tougher. There, none of the horses I think that you'd want to see having run back have run back. There's been the fourth place finisher came back and got a 30 fig going long on the dirt on a dry track. So I think it's just that question. It was what kind of the odd unsealed sloppy track. So and Tampa's sort of a quirky surface to begin with. I just get the feeling that Ben Colebrook is testing out how good this filly is. He knows he'll have a ton of options with her. Otherwise, she's a homebred. So I think it might just be a little bit too much too soon, but I'm not going to talk anybody off of her at 15 or 20 to 1.
Yeah, I think she's that's a murky look. Didn't get bet, was 9 to 1, Tampa, blah blah, slap. She's okay, and I'm very interested in including her, and at the very least boosting Exact and Try behind Feedback, who I'm anxious to. We'll talk to Mike Welch at the end of the show, and we'll see what they have to say about the way Feedback has looked preparing for this. Happens to be a horse that we will get a read on in the Clocker report, because she has not been at Payson. If she was at Payson, we wouldn't know. So we'll go from there. So a 4 as a lone A and 137 C's for Nick in the forward gal. Let's go to the Swale, which seems to have a preponderance of horses, Nick, that want to be in the same place on the racetrack, more or less pace pressing.
Yeah, it does. This looks like a race where they're really going to fly early, and unless we see a pretty major series of tactic changes, I think they're going to move. And that's going to set things up for who knows. I think you're going to look for horses maybe that have shown the ability to come from off the pace in the past or have circumstances going that would maybe push them in that direction. And I'll tell you who I'm definitely using as one of my A's, who's going to be a big price. I don't know if he'll be as big a price as his morning line, as Topper T, who was put into a couple of really tough spots off of the barn change and the private purchase. Ended up in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, where obviously he was 52 to 1. It was always going to be a tough spot. And then the Kentucky Jockey Club was an extremely fast-paced race. This horse came over from the 13 post to clear the field and understandably tired late. Now cuts back for Bill Mott, who, if you haven't noticed, is quietly having a very, very good run at Gulfstream. It looks like he's been training well. Obviously not one that will have the advantage of the Clocker report, being that he was at Payson. But with Javier Castellano getting on board, this feels like the kind of horse that he's just going to take back and let make one run. There's a little bit too many obvious elements going for him to think that his price will drift up maybe as high as 15 to 1. But that being said, there are a lot of horses in this race that are faster than him on speed figures, and he does have two sort of ugly running lines coming in, albeit against better horses. So I think you'll get some value. He's the kind of horse that you want to use in any kind of multi-race play. I thought there were a few horses that are going to be both bet and not quite as bet that I think you wanted to use. Call Paul seems obvious. Jason Service is a throw out at your own risk at this point in Florida or pretty much anywhere. And this is a horse that is very simply 3 for 3 sprinting and 0 for 2 going a mile. So he's a horse that wants to go probably 7/8 or less. I think they took the easy money in running him in the Pennsylvania Nursery back in December, and now obviously are testing deeper waters off the layoff. He's a horse that can probably rate comfortably and make a move from just a little bit off the pace. That's generally IRAD's comfort zone as well. He's one of the best at getting horses to relax. Because, I mean, you'd look through this field and between High Crime and to an extent both Jackson and Frosted Grace and to High Crime's outside, you have Take Command, who went wire to wire last time. Call Paul has speed. Seismic Jolt has speed. Hard Bell is not going to be far off of it. And Country Singer has gone wire to wire in two consecutive races. I mean, it is just absolutely positive. relatively jammed with speed, and I think that's going to open the door for somebody from a little bit off of it. So I'm going to concentrate mainly on Topper T, Call Paul, Seismic Jolt, and Zenden. Those are going to be my four A's. That's I think, covering exactly who I want in terms of running style and maybe interesting things that are happening coming into it. I just don't see this, even with Call Paul having the fast speed figures and the high percentage connections, I don't see him really going much below 3-1 in this race. So I think that's probably an inaccurate type of number, and you're going to be looking at a board with a great amount of value. And I mean, in doing that, I'm basically not using as a main horse High Crime, who comes in off a huge performance and a big buyer speed figure. But for my money, that was earned against a field that I think proved to be a little bit weaker than we thought going into it, and this horse was able to get clear and set a pretty slow pace. The circumstances are going to be very, very different this time around. So he's one that while he just might end up being able to relax from a little bit off of it, obviously every button Luis Saez is pressing right now is working. He's one that I think you probably want to take a little bit more of a critical approach to, given that we kind of missed the wedding last time. We don't want to go to the funeral.
What about Country Singer?
I think Country Singer is a horse that you have to use in a backup position, and he would be a B for me because he's drawn favorably on the outside. He should get that good stock and pounce trip, and I think that's something that can work for him. I do think, and one of the weak points in my handicapping is anticipating what's going to happen, especially in sprints in these races that just look overloaded with pace. And a lot of times what ends up helping certain horses like Country Singer is that they become the outside speed, and they're sort of in their own little race stalking out there and can end up benefiting from that. So he's one that I would use as a B and hope that he can kind of stalk and pounce maybe if some of the speed falters.
As you describe that outside speed, as Marty McGee identifies it, the open air outside box where the air is free and clear. And in fact, Martin liked he's a sucker for Ralph Nix in a good spot too. And we've got the 3, the 5, the 8, and the 9 as A's. We've got the 11 as a B, and I suppose High Crime as a C. Frosted Grace, any
yeah,
reason one, to protect?
1-2-4 as C's.
1-2-4 as C's. Very good. That gets us to the feature. And you mentioned earlier a little bit referencing Maximus Mischief, even money on J Stone's line, and that seems right. There are some horses that, you know, that certainly bear discussion, Mijos being one of them. And then we'll see about Federal Case making his second start after the acquisition in November by Bob and Luana Lowe. Epic Dreamer, okay, made a trip to Remington and now back in Florida, and seems like he's worked very well for this 3-year-old debut. Some thoughts?
Yeah, you know, this is going to be fun because Maximus Mischief, obviously, we've seen is a horse with a tremendous amount of talent, and I think comes out of what was an underrated Remsen, which he won very, very handily. So I'm excited to see how this goes. I'm honestly a little skeptical of Maximus Mischief. One of the things that I would use as maybe a little bit of a strike against him, and we're all one part of one big happy family, so I can invoke the Timeform US factor here. This horse has been involved in paces in each of his three starts that are coded blue in Timeform US, and what that means is that they were slow. And this is going to be an exceptionally fast-paced race. He's drawn outside. There's a quick run to the first turn. I mean, the two horses immediately to his outside both look like they are going to be all-out send right from the start. There's just no way I think you would run a horse like Gladiator King unless you were trying to wire the field. And if my man Luch bought a horse like Going for Gold
to run
a race like this, and is putting the bleachers.
He's scratching.
Scratching. Okay, good. Good to know. I kind of wondered if he would. But he's another one who would have gone. So either way, I think you're going to have Gladiator King go. Come on, Jerry has some speed. Down towards the inside, you've seen speed from Federal Case. Epic Dreamer has speed. It feels like a race where they're going to move, and that's just going to put Maximus Mischief in a slightly tougher spot than he's ever been in before. So I'm going to use he and Mios as the A's. But I'm going to come back and play an extra ticket of feedback with those four A's with Mijos, because I to me, this race really looks like it's going to set up well for him. He feels like a horse that's only going to get better with more ground. And though he did get a bit of a fast pace to run into last time, I mean, hell, he was only about a length and a half off of it. So it's not as if he was some great pace beneficiary. Now, this is a horse who improved quite a bit from his first to his second start, looked like a horse that really could go on distance-wise, and certainly didn't do anything to dissuade me from thinking that coming into his third start, really stepping up in competition. So with that gradual progression and another move forward, this to me looks like one of the more exciting horses we might see in South Florida. Both of them are, for that matter. So it's good to see them this early hooking up, and we'll see. If this race unfolds the way I think it's going to, I think it's going to be much, much more in Mijos' favor than it is going to be in Maximus Mischief's.
Well, and I don't know if you know, if this isn't a good spot for Butchie Reed to, you know, to tinker with Maximus Mischief, you know, letting somebody go and you know, setting up shop outside, stalking somebody. This is probably the right opportunity to, you know, to take that, you know, to take that experiment to the afternoons.
Yeah, I think that it's actually a great spot, because he's really worried about, you know, when push comes to shove, they're worried about one horse in this race, and that horse is going to be coming from 5-6 lengths behind them. So he has given the appearance of having a little bit more there than we've seen, and we're going to obviously have to start seeing it. We're going to need to see it in terms of getting towards the Kentucky Derby, but he's a horse that's starting off from a great particular spot, and looks like there's a little bit more there. So if he is, you know, three wide pressing going into the back stretch, I don't necessarily think that's the worst trip for him in over a racetrack like Gulfstream, where a lot of times, you know, two to three pass off the rail might end up being the best spot. So with Federal Case being one of the early rivals that he'll have to deal with, you know, that horse is drawn inside. It's tough to believe that he's going to work out really an ideal trip, and he's facing considerably better horses than he did last time. So it is a good situation for them to try that out. All reports in terms of what you've heard about Maximus Mischief's training is that he's just a monster in the morning. One of the things they've struggled with most at times has been getting him to relax. And so we'll see. He'd relax very nicely in the Remsen, so maybe in the afternoon it's not as much of a concern. So I'm very excited to see this horse run. I thought he was extremely impressive in the Remsen. And, you know, you don't see horses ticking off 97 and 98 buyer speed figures as two-year-olds if they're phonies in any way. So this looks like a real racehorse, and it's a lot of fun to see him back.
So we've got Maximus Mischief, basically the 6 and the 8, Mijos and Maximus Mischief. Anybody to consider as a B?
You know, I don't see anybody in this race as a B. I think there's a big drop off to everybody else. The horses that if I were to use a B, it would be Federal Case. And the thing is, what you're trying to do there is you're basically trying to you know, make a slight profit if this thing goes feedback with either of the Bs there into Federal Case. But I think you're looking at it being at least from my handicapping, a big drop-off from the first two to everybody else. I think there are some interesting Cs. Garter and Ty and Harvey Wallbanger both feel like horses that you're using only if you believe this thing could really incinerate on the front end, and I think there's at least a chance of that. They're both going to have to step up quite a bit in order to beat a horse like Maximus Mischief or even Mijos, but that's where you can put in a couple of prices and maybe try and get alive for a little bit of a score if one of those wins at a big price.
So we, in terms of the all A ticket, the 4 with the 3-5-8-9 with the 6-8.
Right. I mean, that's something we're going to punch for probably $5. This is going to be, you know, along the lines investment-wise of where we were at Tampa a couple of weeks ago, and I think all the backups are prices, so that's, you know, that's who you're using for a little bit of a boost in the exotics, and we'll just see. We'll see if there's any other scratches to narrow it down a little bit, but it's not a sequence, I think, where you have to be particularly wide on the top end.
And you also are suggesting maybe, you know, coming back for, you know, another $2 or $2.50 pressing Mijos a little bit.
I'd like to, yeah, absolutely. That's just a $4 ticket. I think you'd probably do another $2.50 on Mijos in the third leg and make that all A investment $50.
There you go. So in addition to what we just mentioned, the 4 with the 3589 with the 6-8, then a 4 with the 3589 with just the 6. So that should Mijos win the Holy Bull, you're going to hit that for a total of 750. You're going to hit it 3.5 times.
Right.
Nice. Very good. We'll write it up and put it up on the website. Before we go, Nick, got literally 90 seconds. The Withers opinion.
I'll tell you, Withers is a good race. And everybody get involved in this pick five tomorrow, linking up Aqueduct and Oaklawn, which is a really terrific bet. And they're doing it at the Aqueduct takeout rate of 15%. The Withers looks like a race where there will be some pace. Lucky Lee and Not That Brady both have a lot of speed. I think we're going to see a test from Aretti. We're also going to get a sense of maybe how good that Remsen was from Tax, who ran third behind Maximus Mischief and Network Effect and now comes back in his second start for Danny Gargan, drawn very favorably on the inside. I don't know necessarily if our brain trust is really going to benefit from the stretch out. I think that he is probably going to top out at around a mile. I'd be more inclined to bet Lucky Lee than Not That Brady because I do think he'd be able to rate just a little bit. I think there would be something sort of deliciously ironic about Frankie Pennington winning on a Cassius King horse on a day where he is no longer riding their best horse, but it looks like they have a nice little deputy in Lucky Lee. So, mainly for me, it's going to be Lucky Lee. I'm going to use probably Tax and Moretti both in any multi-race plays and just try to get through that. That's the first leg of that pick five I referenced with Oaklawn and Aqueduct, where the two, I haven't looked at the Oaklawn races, which are daunting themselves, but the two Aqueduct races are very competitive. You're not dealing with, people think, oh gosh, Aqueduct winter races. No, the 10th is a nice two-life, as nice as a two-life claimer can be, but it's a very competitive race. I think one with a morning line favorite of about 3-1, and I don't think anybody will go below that. So good race to get involved in. Obviously there's a lot of betting tomorrow. You've got that pick five, you've got the good races at Gulfstream, you've got the mandatory payout at Santa Anita, so it is a cornucopia of wagering opportunities.
Well, and follow Nick and Tam and TAMM 1215, and he'll certainly be commenting as the afternoon progresses, and we'll have the Game Builder brought to you by National HBPA. We'll have the Game Builder up at the website and also at Derby Trail if you in the mornings, before I post that onto at the races website in the selections room at Derby Trail is where I'm formulating all the write-ups, so you can always early in the morning you can follow it as I as I get that work done. Nick, I appreciate it. Well done last week. We will see you in Vegas on Wednesday night or Thursday.
Sounds great, Steve. Safe travels. Good talking to you. Thanks for having me, and I'll see you next week.
You bet. Have fun tonight with the young lovely and Nick Tamaro, everybody. Can't be beat. Let's take a break. 2 hours whistled by as expected on this weekend preview with such good racing to discuss. And Tom Quigley going to join us next. And, of course, Tom was, along with Nate Newby, administering the Pegasus Betting Challenge at Gulfstream. But simultaneously, they were playing at Santa Anita and on Express Bet, etc. So we'll get a quick hit on that and then dive into opinions from Tom for the Rainbow Six force out at Santa Anita tomorrow, as well as the stakes and anything else that that the man they call Q, whatever else he's got, back after this. And then we'll close out the busy morning with Scully and DeRosa and Mike Welch. Stay with us.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, A child from Colombia. A Christian from Iran. A gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hias, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hias.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.